This podcast is a production of Community Covenant Church in Eagle River, Alaska, a place where real people meet a real God to live in a real world. For more information, check out our website at communitycovenant.net.
Reading from Mark chapter 10, verses 35 to 45. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." "You don't know what you're asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink, and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the ten heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many."
And I'm delighted to be here next to you. We have a sermon series that we've called, or I've called, Exponential. And our hope is during the course of this series that we begin to capture a vision of what God is actually doing in the world. And as a result of what God is doing, we begin to see that some of the things that we focus our attention on are pretty puny compared to this large kingdom work that God's at work in. And I'm pretty excited because I think there's some momentum that has developed here at the church. This past Wednesday, we've had the largest number of people we've had to date attend our Wednesday Next Level Movie Conversation Group. We've been averaging both in our online conversation about the whole of our gospel and our Sunday evening conversation group, you know, anywhere between 15 and 25 people. So if you're reading your book, I hope that you're enjoying it, The Whole of Our Gospel. We gave away 450 copies of that book, and we're hoping that slowly and imperceptibly, this message through a variety of channels will begin to seep into our lives in such a way that we, as a church, Community Covenant Church, can begin to see beyond our concerns that are right in front of us to what God is doing in the world around us. So that's my hope in prayer, and I'd like to ask you to join me in prayer as we begin this moment of my speaking. Lord, thank you. Thank you that the mission that you call us to is way bigger than us. It involves, in most cases, more than we have to offer. Thus, we have to trust and depend on you and others to come alongside us. And I pray that on this day, if there are any of us here who are on the verge of understanding the nature of that calling for us, that you would make it very clear and give us the courage to move and lean into the next place that you are calling us, in Jesus' name. Amen. Every week, Jim Phelps opens a package that he serendipitously finds taped under the bench, the park bench that he's sitting on. And inside this package, he finds a small tape player. Kids, for those of you who don't know what a tape player is, ask your grandparents. And he finds some photographs, and he pushes the play button on this tape player, and he begins to look through these photographs, and the voice begins to describe to Jim Phelps this impossible mission that needs to be completed. It needs to involve some foreign government. It always includes some sort of spy craft, sneaking around, putting on disguises, hanging out in dark places. And the mission is always so important. Every episode of the show, it's impossible. The mission is always so important that the fate of the human race depends upon the success of their mission on this given Friday night. Was it Fridays that they played that back in the day? Sundays? I don't know. And then at the end of the tape, and this is my favorite part, the voice says, this is your mission, Jim. Let me try again.
Your mission, Jim, should you decide to accept it.
And then there would be this brief description of the mission, which would set up that episode and what that episode would be about. And this is my favorite part. The voice of the tape says that this tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Good luck, Jim. And at that moment, the fuse would be lit on the screen, and you would hear that Mission Impossible music. How does it go again? Come on. Yeah, come on. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, and then it would fade to black, and you'd go into the commercials. I love that show. And I actually like not quite as much, because Tom Cruise is way too handsome and he's not beamed up enough. But I like the movie remix of the show too. But what's so compelling about the show, really, if you think about it? I think Mission Impossible, which is the show that I'm talking about, was a popular television show because it's about a group of people, a team of people engaging in mission. Week in, week out, the success or failure of Jim Phelps and his team began with a very simple choice. Your mission, Jim, should you decide to accept it. Now, what if Jim Phelps and his team would have said, sorry, I can't do mission this week. Too busy, the kids are sick. Think I'm coming down with something? I have to get my flowers planted before spring and summer come and go here in Alaska. I'm sorry, it doesn't really fit into my schedule this week. I can't be troubled with a mission right now. Why don't you get back to me on that? Why don't you get back to me? Now, the reason why Jim Phelps and his Mission Impossible team never did this is because if they would have, there would have been no show, right? There would have been no point. There would have been no reason. This leads me to the first observation about Mission Impossible or Impossible Mission, and that is this. If there is no mission, there's no point. If there's no mission, there's no point. And sadly, there's a lot of churches that I have seen in the course of my life as a pastor that lose sight of the fact that they exist for mission. And that the moment they do that, even though it's subtle and it doesn't happen, you know, dramatically, but over time, if a church loses its sensibility about mission, guess what, folks? Just like the show, there's no point. So let's take a look for a couple seconds at Mark's gospel that was read for us a moment ago and see if we can identify Jesus' mission and discover what implications of Jesus' mission there are for us as 21st century, busy, sophisticated followers of Jesus. Let's just take a look at it real quick. I think there's 3 screens of slides, just so you can stay with me here. We've already read most of it. First of all, we have a picture here of the sons of Zebedee. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, come to Jesus, and they have a legitimate question. They said, hey, we want for you, Jesus, to do for us whatever we ask. And then Jesus responds by saying this, what do you want me to do for you? And they replied, and this is this is the most, astounding reply probably that the disciple of any time in the ministry of Jesus. They replied, "Let one of us sit on your right hand, the most important place in the kingdom, and let the other of us sit on your left." How arrogant is that? And then, this is how Jesus responds. I think. Is there another slide there? "You don't know what you're asking." Sorry, go back. "You don't know what you're asking. You have no idea what you have just asked me," Jesus says. "Can you drink the cup that I drink? Can you be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized?" There's a lot more in this interchange between Jesus and these two arrogant disciples that meets the eye than we have time to go into today. But this is one of those texts, and you run into these occasionally as you read the Bible, that reveals the true motivation of the disciples as James and John, these two brothers, these two fishermen brothers, find themselves in kind of this heated argument about who will get to be bumped up to preferred seating on their Alaska Airways trip between Galilee and Jerusalem. Why are you laughing at this? It's the same, right? Who's going to get preferred seating? I can hear them now. John says this. "Hey, James, who do you think Jesus will invite to sit on his right and his left at that great banquet in the kingdom? Who's going to get that special place?" And James, of course, he doesn't need a whole bunch of time to ponder this question because he's been thinking about it for some time already. "Well, I'm not exactly sure, John. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be surprised if I occupied one of those preferred seats." John responds, "What are you talking about, dude?" That's the first time he's heard dude in a sermon a while, isn't it? "Yes. What are you talking about, dude? First of all, Jesus isn't going to go, okay? He's going to select two of us from the same family. So if one of the seven brothers gets the call, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be you." I mean, can you see this conversation developing? So what started out as sort of a playful banter between two competitive brothers becomes a little more serious. And with each comment, one brother raises the stakes on this conversation a little higher until they're practically yelling at each other. "I have an idea," says one of the brothers. "Let's ask Jesus what he thinks." Okay. So the 70 brothers approach Jesus and they say, "We want for you, Jesus, to do for us whatever we ask." Now, I don't know what that sounds like to you as you hear that sort of on your ears this morning. But if one of my children said something like that to me, I doubt that I would have responded the way Jesus did. Jesus responded with grace and a certain level of patience. And perhaps Jesus had heard them squabbling as they walked along the way for the last hour. As a good parent at this point, when they invited him into the conversation, he was willing to sort of weigh in on their ridiculous debate. So Jesus replies, "What would you like for me to do for you?" "Well," Jesus is simple. They blurt out, "We want preferred seating when you come into your kingdom. That's what we want." And the words, I suspect, just come there. As Jesus sort of pondered the meaning of this, thought about the nature of their request for a moment, and finally Jesus breaks the silence and he says this: "You don't know what you're asking. You have no idea what you're asking." The rest of the disciples by now are undoubtedly paying attention because of the utter arrogance of the Zebedee brothers in this conversation and this request that they've made to Jesus. Who do they think they are? The Zebedees. Can you see this going on? And then Jesus continues to answer them by saying this: "Can you drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I will be baptized with?" Now, of course, thinking that Jesus, in this particular instance, was talking about a cup of wine that they often shared together when they had a meal together, or the baptism with water that they had seen John the Baptist perform many times prior to this. The Zebedee brothers answered this question of Jesus without giving it too much thought. And they simply said, yes, we can. Of course, we can drink the cup. We've been doing it for years. If that's for baptism, sure, why not? The next time we cross paths with John the Baptist, we would be happy to get dunked again. Jesus surprises the other disciples who at this point are kind of listening in, seeing what's going to transpire in this conversation between these Zebedees and Jesus. And Jesus says, yes, you will. You will drink the cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. And Jesus wasn't, in this case, talking about wine or water. He was talking about mission. He was talking about ministry. He was talking about the sacrifice that would be required for those who chose to follow him. This was a Jim Phelps moment for the disciples. See, when we think Jesus is talking about wine and water, Jesus is really talking about mission and sacrifice. And when James and John, the sons of Zebedee, assure Jesus that they too know what he's talking about, and they can get into the cup, even though they don't have a clue what Jesus is talking about, they will eventually understand that the cost of following Jesus is more than wine and water. They will eventually figure out that Jesus was on a mission from God. And that mission didn't have anything to do with status, influence, or whether one has preferred seating at the table of the Lord. It has nothing to do with that. And so Jesus, seeing this as a perfect teaching moment, he gathers his disciples around him and says, let me be clear about something here, boys, so that none of you are confused about the nature of the mission that I am inviting you to be part of. You are familiar with kings and kingdoms where the most important people in the room get the best seats, Jesus says. The finest meals. They're the ones that everybody else envies and look up to. They look up to and say, I wish I could be like that. If that's what you think God's kingdom looks like, Jesus says, you're missing the point. If you want to understand what God is doing in the world, if you want to be part of a mission that God is unfolding every moment, even this very moment in time, then you have got to get your head around this. If you want to be great in God's kingdom, then you've got to pick up a towel and you've got to serve somebody. To quote a great song from Bob Dylan. Because if you don't know who Bob Dylan is, ask your grandparents, you're going to know him. The kingdom is not about wine and water. It's about mission and sacrifice for the sake of others. And then Jesus concludes with these unbelievable, remarkable words. I have come not to be served, but to give my life away as a ransom. That's my mission. And that's the mission that I'm inviting you, you thick-headed disciples, to be part of. And Jesus probably didn't put it quite that way. I have a hunch that for many of us, at some point or another in our lives as followers of Jesus, as we stumble through it, right? We don't have it all figured out, I know that. There are times when our coals burn hot for Jesus and his kingdom, and there are other times when we pretty much like to coast. We pretty much like to get by on whatever the minimum requirement is. Yeah, there might be a mission, and we might make one or two, and then we might miss a few. And that's true for me, too, as a pastor, believe it or not. I don't know if I should make that confession. this, I struggle with the same kind of hot work and calls that you do when it comes to faith and faithfulness and mission and service. And I'll have this communion chalice and paten. In other words, I have basically a goblet and a plate. Those are religious words to describe a goblet and a plate. And it was given to me very early in my ministry as a gift. And most of the time, this goblet and this plate, this chalice and paten, it just sits on shelf in my office. But right now, it's packed away in some box someplace in Kent, Washington, in a storage container. But wherever I've been for any length of time, I always take this out and I put it on either on my desk or on the shelf, along with some of the other mementos that remind me of who I am and what I have agreed to do and say to Jesus, yes, I will follow you. And when I read scriptures like this one that we've been looking at today, when I think about this chalice and this paten, this goblet and this plate that are used for communion, I can hear the voice of Jesus calling out to me sometimes, "Rat, can you drink that?" And unlike the Zebedee brothers, I don't want to misunderstand what Jesus is asking. I don't want to respond with some flip, "Sure, bring it on." Jesus, "I'm ready. Bring it on." Rather, I want to hear Jesus' invitation to me as a clear call to mission, to sacrifice, rather than simply an invitation to sit at the head of the table. And Jesus asks each of us the question, "Can you drink the cup?" He's asking us whether or not we are prepared to allow our lives to be directed by the mission of God in the world rather than by our own dreams and visions and desires. That's what Jesus is asking. So if you came into this gig called following Jesus with the assumption that you can keep doing everything that you're doing, then somebody didn't do a very good job communicating to you what the nature of the kingdom is like. Because it's exactly opposite from that. The Catholic spiritual writer, Henry Nouwen, he has a little book that he entitled, "Can You Drink the Cup?" So we know what this book is about, right? And he asks the question in a slightly different way, and I like it, and so let me read for you just a short section of how he asks it. He says, "Can you empty it, that is the cup, to the dregs? Can you taste all the sorrows and all of the joys? Can you live your life to the full, whatever it will bring?" And then now I ask this, why should we drink the cup? There is so much pain. There is so much anguish. There is so much violence. Why should we drink the cup? Wouldn't it be a lot easier to live normal lives with a minimum of pain and maximum of pleasure? And then he says, drinking the cup is much more than gulping down whatever happens to be in there. Just as breaking the bread is much more than tearing the loaf apart. Drinking the cup of life involves holding, lifting, drinking. It's the full celebration of what it means to be human. When you think about it, Jesus' question to the disciples both then and now, "Can you drink the cup?" Do you understand that the cup that we drink is a cup of suffering and sacrifice, of mission and sacrifice? Do you realize that the baptism which we receive is a baptism into the mission of God poured out for those around us? Do you know that Jesus' mission is a mission of obedience to the will of the Father, no matter what? so I ask you the question, don't be too quick to answer. It's the same question that Jesus asked his disciples. Can you drink the cup?
See, the gospel of Jesus Christ fills our hearts with great joy at the recognition of what we have been given, this great gift that can never be taken away from us. And the gospel of Jesus is also a cup of sacrifice and a mission where we must be willing to pour ourselves out for others, even though we know there will be pain in the process.
The gospel of Jesus is a mission to which we are invited to direct our lives. For Jesus, the mission entailed his own suffering, his sadness, and eventual death.
So, why should we be surprised that the mission that Jesus is inviting us to looks any different than that?
Yeah, you know, I could preach a gospel that's just all happy and clappy and makes everybody feel good all the time, and there's pastors probably in the state of Alaska that do that. I know that there's pastors on television that do that, and they have congregations of 40,000 people, and every pastor like me looks at them and goes, wow, that must be great.
But there's one part of that gospel that's missing, especially when I read this text where Jesus says, can you drink this cup? See, if we see too many, if we want to live lives that make an exponential impact on our world, it all begins with how we answer this Jim Phelps question. If we want our lives to make a tangible difference for God's kingdom, it means completely reorienting ourselves to the values of God's kingdom.
And this is not easy. I know this. I know that most of you here know this. It means, among other things, forgiving others who have hurt us, whether they know it or not. Did you hear me?
It means giving ourselves away without those who we serve expressing gratitude to us in return. It means swallowing our pride. It means getting over ourselves. It means allowing God to shape us into the people that God is actively calling us, each of us, to become in our own unique giftings, in our own unique sets of circumstances. That's what it means, which brings me back to the original question that I asked a few moments ago.
Can you drink? Are we on a mission impossible or an impossible mission? Following Jesus in service and sacrifice, or are we hoping to just get by with as little disruption to our life and our plans as possible? I can't answer that for you. It's your choice. But I think I can hear the voice on the tape recorder right now. Can you? For a mission, community covenant service, should you decide to accept.
We have no more lame excuses, God.
There are no good reasons why we cannot receive. respond to this call to mission and service that you ask us to. Forgive us for getting lost in our own plans. Forgive us for getting distracted by our own pursuits. Forgive us for dissuading others from following you with the kind of tenacity that somehow they understand, and we don't want them to jump ahead of us because it'll make us look bad. God, the work of your kingdom is much bigger than us. It's much bigger than any member of this staff. It's much bigger than this church. And we can't believe you're inviting us into that. Help us to understand. What that means for each of us in these days and weeks ahead as we hear the voice invite us into a ministry of mission and sacrifice that perhaps we've never paid attention to before. In Jesus' name.